Next is State versus Renee Rodriguez. If counsel could please step forward.
Good morning, Your Honor. Jason Mack on behalf of the state.
Carol Henderson, Assistant Attorney General. On behalf of the Attorney General, Amicus Curiae.
Good morning, Marcia Costello. Costello and Whitmore appearing on behalf of defendants Nolan and Lafferty.
Good morning, Mark Otto with the firm of the Boise and Marriage Love of Weissman on behalf of defendant and court lawyers.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome. Mr. Maggott, please go ahead.
Before the state begins, the state would respect the request for 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
That's fine.
Thank you. May it please the court. The issue before the court today is one of the appellate division erroneously interpreting and utilizing NJSA 2C:4026, especially subsection C, which specifically states that if a defendant is found guilty, there will be a fixed minimum sentence of 180 days, during which the defendant is ineligible for parole. Specifically, in this instance, while the appellate division correctly determined that the 180 days must be served in its entirety in the county jail, it erroneously determined the manner in which that sentence was to be served by finding that an intermittent periodic sentence served on weekends pursuant to 2C 43-2B7 would permit it, despite the fact that it was an ineligible period of parole, which the state's position is it would require a consecutive sentence. In this instance, where the legislature has expressly stated a mandatory period of parole ineligibility, the appellate division nor the trial court were permitted to engage in their own discretion and their own analysis of the statute and its meaning. Additionally, even if we were to move and set that aside, the legislative intent in this instance is abundantly clear that this statute was came into existence to combat recidivist offenders who present a clear danger to society, and the necessity for the 180 days in jail consecutively enables the protection of society from these offenders who continue to operate their vehicle, specifically when that suspension is tied to a DWI violation. Therefore, it's the state's position that reversal is warranted in this instance.
Are you done with your opening statement?
Yes.
Does the statute expressly forbid the imposition of intermittent days or weekends in custody?
Expressly, in terms of the beginning of the statute says notwithstanding, and it references the two sentencing statutes, specifically the presumption or non-presumption of incarceration, as well as the terms. So in that regard, the statute does specifically address that. It does not specifically reference 2C 43-2B7 in this instance. However, it is the state's position that the language, mandatory period of parole eligibility, does, in that verbiage, expressly state
so
that
you keep talking about parole ineligibility.
Correct.
And I don't see parole in this at all. The demand is 180 days, and what the appellate division found was that 180 days can be served over a period of weekends, but it had to be the 180 days. Where's the parole?
Well, and that question is interesting in the sense of, in most of these instances, the defendants are only given the absolute mandatory minimum, which is the 180 days. But for example, to address Your Honor's question, what if the defendants received 270 days? What if they received 364 days county jail, which is completely permissible in this instance? In that situation, the defendants would have to serve 180 days before they'd be eligible for release from custody, before they'd be eligible for parole to reduce the remainder of that sentence. So say, for example, the defendant did receive 270 days. It is the state's position that the defendant would have to serve 180 days consecutively in custody until they'd be eligible for the possibility of release for custody regarding the additional 90 days that are remaining. In this instance,
parole reduces the period of incarceration by releasing to parole.
Right.
But in this situation here, the period of incarceration is not reduced. It's simply modified so that it's served in intermittent periods pursuant to 2B7. So it's, how do you equate that to parole? Because there's no reduction in the time of period of incarceration.
I think, again, that goes to Justice Timpone's question that, in this instance, the absolute minimum is only being asked to these defendants by the court to their benefit.
But even if it was a maximum, but the minimum is 180, if they have to serve the 180, they're not paroled, that period is not reduced in any way.
Correct.
It's just a question of how it's served. It's continuous or intermittent.
Correct. And that is the state's position, that when there's a period of parole ineligibility, what does parole benefit to a defendant? What does it avail a defendant to? And that is release from custody. When you look at case law that discusses parole, it says parole is the release from custody under conditions. Parole
So this is what I'm trying to understand by parsing the language. Are you suggesting that this intermittent, because of this intermittent sentence, when the person is released after spending a weekend in jail, that that somehow constitutes parole and therefore is in violation of the statute? Are you arguing that or not?
No, it's not the state's position that it is exactly the same as parole. Parole is the conditional release from custody, and you have to abide by certain conditions.
So if he's serving 180 days, that's the mandatory minimum, right?
Correct.
So whether he does it 2 days on weekends or does them consecutively, he still has 180 mandatory days, correct?
Correct, but he's serving it with a condition, that is Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday, depending on how the sentence is rendered, the condition is you can leave custody, go work, go exist in society, and then return.
I thought your position was that by the legislature's inclusion of setting a fixed minimum sentence of not less than 180 days during which the defendant shall not be eligible for parole evidences legislative intent that those 180 days not be served intermittently, that they have to be consecutive. Is that correct?
Yes, that is also the state's position.
Now, I ask you that because I was looking throughout the Title IIc to see if the legislature has used language similar to that, that in other settings that would have indicated a willingness on their part to permit intermittent sentences. And I notice that under NERA, where a sentence must be served minimally for 85% before someone's eligible for parole, there's very similar language. It says that the court shall fix a minimum term of 85% of the sentence imposed during which the defendant shall not be eligible for parole. I don't think anyone would argue that from that language the legislature would have ever contemplated that any part of the 85% could be served on an intermittent basis, do you?
Not at all, and that is the state's position, that the old adage that you can't look at a statute and interpret it in a way that would lead to an absurd result, and that is the state's position, that in any other statute that requires a period of parole ineligibility, especially a statutorily mandated period, no court would assume that, for example, taking the Graves Act example, say a defendant got a 3-2-1. No one would assume that 1 year period of parole ineligibility would be served.
Well, I don't know the
weekends.
Language of the Graves Act, if it matches up as closely as the NERA statute does, but I think the NERA statute is very similar to the one that we're looking at now, and I've never heard of an interpretation of that one that comes close to what the appellate division has done.
Well, can you get nights or weekends on a state prison sentence?
I don't think there's any exclusion to that.
It seems to me, maybe I'm mistaken, that 43-2B7 is really dealing with sentences to the county jail.
I've
never heard of anyone ever getting nights and weekends on a state prison sentence. Have you?
No, I have not, Your Honor, and I think because there is no specific language that excludes it to state prison. But
the reason why I'm raising that, because that would take off the table all of the NERA and all of the Graves Act offenses, correct?
Correct.
Because they're all state prison sentences.
Correct. But in that regard, if we were to say that would take off the table Graves Act or NERA, then why in this instance should this statute permit defendants to have intermittent sentences on weekends? Because, again, the state's position in its briefs was there has to be a recognition of a distinction between statutorily mandated periods and discretionary mandated periods.
Let me ask you this question. A person who gets 364 days in the county jail must do a minimum of 60 days.
Correct.
In the county jail, correct?
Correct.
You're not arguing that those, unless I'm mistaken, you're not arguing that those 60 days can't be intermittent, are you?
No. The state is not.
Okay, so I'm trying to so those 60 days are mandatory. Why are those 60 days any different than the 180 days mandatory?
Because in this instance, the language of the statute, that's got to be a fixed minimum sentence, during which the service of that fixed minimum sentence, you're ineligible for parole.
But it's the same is true for the 60 days. If we look at all of the applicable statutes, you got to do those 60 days, and you're not eligible for parole, correct?
But you may be eligible for programs or other things of that nature, whereas in this instance, case law has made clear defendants are ineligible for programs, they're ineligible for alternative sentencings. In Your Honor's example, a defendant might be able to get house arrest, a defendant might be able to get other avenues to serve that sentence, but in this instance, case law has made clear you cannot avail yourself to those alternatives. And the question is why? It's because the legislature clearly intended to protect society and to deter these recidivist offenders. These are individuals that have committed a multitude of offenses. They continue to fail to abide by the law.
So don't we really need to focus on the language of the statute and see what it allows and what it forbids? How do you come to the conclusion from the specific words in Section 26 that weekends are out?
Because if you look at the statute, when it came to the term a period of parole ineligibility, the appellate division interpreted that to equate to the length and form of the sentence. But that is not necessary, because if you look at the statute, it says a fixed minimum sentence. The fixed minimum, that addresses the number of days and how they must be served. But when you look to, it says during which, so during the service of that sentence, an individual is ineligible for parole. If you're ineligible to be paroled, how can you be eligible to serve your sentence intermittently on weekends and be released from custody Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday? Well,
there's a certain illogic to saying that somebody can't be released under parole, where at least they're going to be subjected to close supervision and other conditions as to what they can and cannot do during their free time, and permitting during a same fixed minimum period someone to go in prison for a weekend, then go home, work for a week, and then go back on Friday night, subject to no supervision whatsoever during the in between days.
Correct.
It's an entirely different schema, isn't it?
Yes, it does. It lends itself to a completely illogical reasoning. And with parole, there's conditions. There's, lack of a better term, there's a guillotine over the defendant's neck. It's that if you violate your conditions, you're going to violate parole and go back into jail and serve the remainder of your sentence.
Right. I'm looking at the going back to the chiefs. Since the days off are not parole, ineligible for parole, you're still doing 180 days. And if there are two plausible interpretations, should the doctrine of lenity not come into play?
No.
Not at all, because you have to go through three steps to get to the doctrine of lenity, and that's first looking at the statute itself and making a determination if it's clear and unambiguous. And if we say there's ambiguity, when you look at the legislative intent, since it's abundantly clear that the legislator did not intend for these recidivist offenders to freely leave jail Monday through Friday to go to work.
Isn't that part of the purpose? These people are recidivists. They've violated before, so part of the issue is that if they're on the road going to work every day, there's no protection for the public?
Correct.
Wasn't that part of the intent of the statute?
Correct.
Can be read
talk about a proverbial carrot. You're saying to these individuals, please, be free Monday through Friday to go to work. How are these individuals going to get to work freely? They're going to drive to work.
I noticed the model penal code doesn't allow for intermittent sentencing, and New Jersey is one of three states that has gone off on its own having some form of intermittent sentencing with little guidance compared to some of the other states that have. Is there anything that we should glean from the fact that New Jersey is unusual in this respect? And does it help your case?
I don't believe so. I think the service of weekends or intermittent services during nights or weekends, it's something that exists, but is so, in my years of experience in criminal court, which has now been plus over 10 years, both on trial, at the trial level and at the appellate level, I have never seen a weekend sentence ever been given to a defendant, because quite honestly, if a court is going to give a split sentence where it might be a term of custody as well for probation or just a straight term of custody, it's usually inclusive of a program, because if a court's going to give it at that in that situation, mm-hmm. it's usually with a program of some nature.
Let me ask you the flip side of that. Do you see, and based on the question a little bit earlier with my colleagues, do you see any distinction in the statutes between the appellate division's view of this statute and, for example, NERA? In other words, could the appellate division's decision lend itself to an argument in a NERA sentence for attempted murder or aggravated sexual assault or whatever, that someone is potentially eligible for nights or weekends? I'm not saying a judge would impose such a sentence, but would that open itself up to an interpretation of those statutes, which are also silent on this issue, to be to be applied so as to allow somebody to go home from Monday to Friday?
Absolutely. I think, not to use the old law school adage of a slippery slope, but that certainly would be in this situation, that if the appellate division's opinion were to be upheld, saying that when you receive a statutory mandated period of parole ineligibility, you are exposed to having access to avail yourself to potentially weekend services or nights, then yes, defendants would be. And again, going back to the example of the Graves Act, that these defendants who may possibly receive a 3-1 sentence are only serving 1 year of state prison, which is based on that additional 1 day, the 365 versus 364 there in state prison. So I could clearly see a defendant making the argument.
That's kind of a good analogy. It's a relatively short minimum. It's a statutory minimum. There isn't any indication either way with respect to, specifically as to intermittent sentences. Are you saying that the appellate division's decision could be invoked by somebody who commits a Graves Act offense to get a nights and weekend sentence?
Yes, absolutely. That would be the state's position.
Are you suggesting to this court that a Superior Court judge can sentence someone to nights or weekends on a flat state prison sentence, someone gets 5 years in state prison? Are you suggesting that 43(2)(b)(7) would apply?
There is no language that would exclude it. So yes, a court could potentially say you may serve on nights or weekends because, you know what, you might be burdened with the hardship of losing your job or not being able to care for a loved one. And again, admirable and understandable, but that ancillary effect of imprisonment, that's part of the deterrent nature of our criminal code, is that if you're in custody, if you're incarcerated for an extended period of time, that has an impact beyond your freedom being limited.
The legislature, the appellate division, excuse me, was looking for some specific language. It says they must be served consecutively, and cited to other examples in our statutory provisions where that language appears. But when I looked at those statutes, they're talking about seasonal leasing, their civil settings, or they're talking about maximum days. There is no analogy that I could find in the statutes cited as examples that in any way fit the use of that word in the kind of context that we're using it here.
Correct. The appellate division is unable to find any sentencing statute which specifically utilizes the word consecutive
in this manner.
Regarding to the service of sentence.
In the manner in which it wished to find
Correct.
And conclude the
Correct.
Support.
Instead, they relied upon defining what would be a seasonally leased premises
Right.
to support their position that consecutive days are unwarranted in this instance.
Right.
And going back to Justice Fernandez-Vina's question about the deterrence of the nature of this and these individuals being released, in Camden County alone, since this statute came into place, we've charged 493 defendants with a 2C 4026 violation. And just taking a scattershot look at those individuals, the state looked at 255 of those cases. And out of 255, 141 violations occurred Monday through Thursday, and only 114 occurred on Friday and Sunday. So to say that weekend services would further the legislative intent to protect society from these recidivist offenders, that's clearly wrong.
But what about the lack of a license suspension in the statute? I mean, if the legislature were focused on keeping people off the road, wouldn't you expect a license suspension to be included?
License suspension is included in the sense that part and parcel of a 4026 violation is a 39:3-40 violation, which is operating a license while under suspension.
Right, but with that license, that license suspension might be a lot shorter than the sentence, correct? I mean, you could have somebody.
It would not, Your Honor. If under 39:3-40, if an operation of a vehicle is during a period of license suspension tied to a DWI violation, you're looking at least a 2-year license suspension, I believe. It's like 1 to 2 years, but I believe it's a 2-year license suspension under 39:3-40.
Which
and that would run consecutive to whatever present license suspension you're under.
Right. So the person's still going to be suspended. So one of the things that the appellate division was trying to do, rightly or wrongly, was to mitigate the harsh results not only to the individual but to the society for people who are doing 180 days consecutive, who are going to lose their jobs, who therefore won't be able to support their families, who will not be able to pay their rent and therefore may be rendered homeless. Those are some of the things that the appellate division was attempting to accomplish by what it believed was a permissible interpretation of the statute, correct?
Yes, and the state's position, if look to Chief Justice Willens' quote in Des Moretz, it's that it's not the court's business to employ its discretion or to grace individuals with enlightened theories of what sentencing may or may not be. If the legislator specifically mandates something, it is the court's duty to uphold that mandate.
Well, let's look at what the legislature mandated again by going back to the language of the statute and contrast it with the similar statute for driving while intoxicated. Section 4-51 uses language that sounds like what you're arguing for here, that in that circumstance, once you're committed, you can't be released until the term of imprisonment has been served.
Correct.
So what are we to make of the fact that when that the legislature knows how to write that into statutes, and in fact did so elsewhere, but not in this case?
Well, the converse may be said in this instance. It's, again, a statutory mandated period of parole ineligibility. And when we look to, for example, 2C:35-7.
But this isn't, if this is not considered parole, what are we to make of the fact that the legislature has specifically said no consecutive days in 451 using the language that they did, but did not use that very language in section 26?
Well, that language in 4-51 of Title 39 is only applicable to first or second offenders. When it comes to a third DWI offense, there's no that language is not applicable. The courts have, as recently as this past year in State versus Anacama, the court specifically said weekend service of sentences is not applicable to a 180 third DWI violation. So, to address Your Honor's question, it goes to show that the legislator nowhere referenced the 180 days under 4-51, yet the courts have made it clear that in relation to a third violation of the DWI statute, the 180 days must be served consecutively. The only option in that instance is that 90 of those days may be served in an inpatient approved program, but the remaining 90 days must be served consecutively in custody without any alternative.
But that's programs. Not what this. So that's a very precise way that the legislature could have formulated the statute. Consecutive could have also said shall include a fixed minimum sentence of not less than 180 days during which the defendant shall not be released nor shall be eligible for parole. That would be specific, correct?
It would be, but to say shall not be released and shall not be eligible for parole, the state's position, they're one and the same. If you're ineligible for parole, you're ineligible for release from custody. You cannot be released from custody until you're eligible for parole. So to say that you're ineligible for parole for 180 days is saying that.
No, even if a person does intermittent 180 days, once the person completes that sentence, the person would still be subject to parole supervision. Why is that inconsistent?
Because if you're ineligible for parole, you're ineligible to be released from custody whatsoever. Where in this instance, you're being released from custody
Monday
through
Friday.
Well, that's
the reason why
it would be redundant to say can't be released unless ineligible for release.
Correct.
On the parole.
Correct.
There's no need to use both terms.
Correct. And if you look at case law, like, for example, State versus Webster, when it was discussing a mandatory period of parole ineligibility, the language used by the court was, until you've served the entirety of your period of parole ineligibility, you're ineligible for release from custody.
Okay, so one of your arguments is the 180 days and beyond during which you're not, you have to be under some form of supervision, parole or in jail.
Regarding the 180 days,
yeah.
or thereafter?
Well, let's say this 180 days. Is this person going to be on parole when he completes 180 days?
Not if he only received 180 days. If he received 270,
yeah.
If he's deemed eligible for parole after the 180 is served, he'll be under parole for those remaining 90 days.
So let's take the 180, because that's what we're dealing with here. Person got 180 days. What does that language then mean? Shall not be eligible for parole when parole doesn't even apply.
It means that they must serve their sentence consecutively in custody. They're not eligible for the weekend services.
I think we understand your position. Anything else you'd like to add?
No. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Henderson.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Attorney General agrees that this is an issue of statutory interpretation. And it's an interpretation of the language in 4026, and it's also reading it in conjunction with the other provisions in the code. Certainly, we think the language in 4026, you know, could not be clearer. It says you have to serve a minimum of 180 days during which you're not eligible for parole, and parole is release. So this has been the language that's used throughout the code where we have parole ineligibility terms.
But you say, you're saying parole and release are essentially the same, but there are forms of release, including intermittent sentences and in some instances and also special programs that allow people to be non-custody, that are not parole. You would agree with that?
Well, I'm not saying that parole and custody are always the same. I'm just saying that parole is release. There are other forms of release as well.
Right.
But when we're talking about parole, that's the release from custody of a sentence of imprisonment.
Well, there's certainly no question that somebody can't be paroled prior to that 180 days. But the question is whether there is a category of release that is not the same as parole that is envisioned by the statute.
I don't think there is. I think what we're dealing with is if you can impose an intermittent sentence, that's the sentence itself. That's not a sentence of imprisonment. That's an intermittent sentence that's allowed to be served on weekends. And it only applies to certain offenses that would be applicable, which would be disorderly persons offenses and probably some fourth degree offenses. An intermittent sentence is not applicable to a first or second degree or a third degree where you're required to be go to the custody of the Department of Corrections.
So you agree with my... I had questions whether or not this intermittent sentence, nights and weekends, applied to state prison sentences, and you're saying they don't.
It does not.
Okay.
It does not.
And where? Where does the statute say that? I understand maybe that's practice.
Well, it says that first and second degree crimes have a presumption of imprisonment. You have to be sentenced according to 43-6, which is a range of sentence that's between first degree between 10 and 20 years, second degree it'd be 5 to 10, and third degree is 3 and 5. If you look at 43-10, it says when you were sentenced to, depending on the sentence, you're sentenced to the custody of the Department of Corrections.
So if
anything
you were,
over a year.
If you were arguing a case where someone took the appellate division's decision and tried to apply it to a nearer sentence, how would you distinguish it? You see what I mean? If someone said, okay, this is allowed in this case, let's say the appellate division's decision is what it is. This is allowed in under this statute, therefore I, potential nearer defendant, I'm also entitled to serve my NERA sentence of 10 years or whatever it may be, nights and weekends. How would you distinguish those two?
If it was a first or second degree NERA offense, the first thing would be it violated the presumption of imprisonment, because this court has already held that you could not give a term of probation with county jail time and that would not satisfy the presumption of imprisonment. It's not considered a term of imprisonment. An intermittent sentence of nights and weekends is not a sentence of imprisonment. It's something entirely different. When we talk about imprisonment, we're talking about the terms that are in 43-6.
Mm-hmm.
And those terms, by their terms and by 43-10, says that you're committed to the Department of Corrections until you're eligible for parole.
You cited 43-6, which uses similar language in terms of a specific term of years which shall be fixed, term fixed.
Yes.
And the legislature used the same terminology in the statute that we're looking at now. Are you drawing the same inference that the two should be construed together?
Yes. I mean, when we're talking about the legislative intent, they're using the same language in 43-6 that they use throughout the code
Right. Whenever
they're posing a sentence of imprisonment.
Right.
I mean, that's why when we look at the motor vehicle offenses, the language is different. They don't have parole ineligibility terms
Right. In
motor vehicle offenses.
Right.
So if you want somebody to serve the whole time, you say continuous, because you can't say without parole or, you know, parole ineligibility term. That's the language that's applied there. I mean, the interesting thing about the driving while intoxicated statute is that there is a specific municipal statute that says you can get sentences on nights and weekends, and the courts have held that doesn't apply to DWI. So they have a, and that's very similar to here. We have a statute that says intermittent sentence, and we have this sentence that says you can't serve without parole. You have to serve the whole time. In the context of DWI, they say those sentences are inconsistent. So you can't get a weekend or whatever sentence on a DWI. But apparently, you know, according to the appellate division, we can get it here.
So are you saying that in the motor vehicle statutes, they have to say continuous because the overriding statutory scheme doesn't of Title IIc doesn't apply to those statutes?
If it doesn't say continuous for the motor vehicle, they don't have to. They could serve it in days. They could serve the whole thing.
But you're saying in under the code, if it's a code sentence, that it's not necessary for the legislature to express continuous because the overriding statutory scheme envisions a continuous sentence.
Yes. They didn't envision when they sent someone to a term of imprisonment that someone was going to get a term to stay prison, even if it was 18 months, right, that they could say, hey, Department of Corrections, I want to leave every other week, and I'll come back after that. You know, once you're in the custody of the Department of Corrections, you're not getting out to your parole.
So does that explain the reason why, as was commented from the bench and also by counsel, that nobody seems to have ever heard of a night and weekend sentence for a near or a Graves Act offense?
No. I mean, I haven't even heard of a sentence like this for a crime that has no parole ineligibility.
Not in state prison. So
even in county jail, I mean, I haven't seen an intermittent sentence at all.
Well, let's talk about a flat sentence, 364 days. And you would agree, you have to do 60 days before you're eligible for parole in county jail, right?
Yes.
You're not suggesting that those 60 days can't be served intermittently, are you?
If you get a sentence of 364 days, it can't be served intermittently.
Why? I mean,
because your sentence is a term of 364 days. Your term is not an intermittent sentence. There are two different sentencing options.
Well, if the judge said, I understand that the first 60 days have to be, you know, you have to serve the first 60 days, but you can do those on nights and weekends, you're suggesting that would be an illegal sentence?
Yes. He would have to sentence him. I sentence you to an intermittent sentence of 60 days.
So
that's
our
how
intermittent
you would impose that. That's how you impose an intermittent sentence. You don't say an intermittent sentence is not a condition of a sentence of imprisonment. It's a separate sentencing option. So if you're imposing it, there's a limited number of offenses. Obviously, some fourth degree offenses or PDs or DPs. And the sentence itself is an intermittent sentence of
so
a certain duration.
So you give him 90 days. You said 60 days in county jail, intermittent. Yes?
Yes, he could do
How
that.
How about 364 days intermittent?
I don't see any reason why not.
But if the judge did that, 364 days intermittent, under our law, the person would be eligible for parole after he or she served those first 60 days. Those first 60 intermittent days, the person would be eligible for parole, correct?
Yes. But see, that's no different than if you give a flat sentence, they're eligible parole at different times. And the parole is set by the parole statute, that if in county jail it's 60 days or whatever. Here, this statute is saying we're setting the parole for you at 180 days. So that's why it trumps the normal parole statute, and it trumps normal release provisions. This is a specific sentence. It's saying a minimum term of 180 days without parole. Parole is release. You just can't walk in and out. If you have a sentence of imprisonment, it's a sentence of imprisonment. If you have, the question here is whether you can give an intermittent sentence. Our argument is that it's illegal when you have a 180-day minimum term.
What I'm trying to reconcile is with the example that I gave. You got 364 days. You do it intermittently. You say that's correct. After the person has done 60 days intermittently, now you're eligible for parole, right?
Well, you know, I'm not sure how that would work out, how corrections would handle that, because if someone's going in and out for a certain period of time, they may consider that sentence different than a sentence to 364 regular in county jail. It hasn't come up, but if you get a sentence of 364 to county jail and you go in, you're paroled after 60 days, If you get an intermittent sentence of 364 days, I don't know. Maybe they'll make them serve all 364.
But you're not seeing
going in and out.
You say you're not seeing any of these intermittent sentences?
This is the first time I've ever heard of an intermittent sentence. So it's possible they're out there, and they may be on offenses that, you know, are, you know,
don't
DPs or whatever,
terms.
That don't come up through our office. But certainly, I've never seen on a state prison sentence. I've never seen on a county jail sentence.
But the statute specifically allows that, whether you've seen it or not.
Absolutely. And when you look at 43-2, it has a lot of sentencing options, but I'm not giving probation to someone that has a 4026. It depends on what your crime is. All those options listed, it's dependent on what the individual statute is. There's a lot of options there that don't apply to never offenses,
Is there a reason why 4026C, it says, notwithstanding the provisions of 2C436, 2C441, is there any reason it doesn't say notwithstanding the provisions of 43-2B7?
Well, because when we're having the sentencing options, it's implicit whether or not certain options apply. If that was the case, we'd have to put that in every single case where we have a mandatory sentence, or even where there's a term of imprisonment that may not have a mandatory term.
But you're talking about, you've already acknowledged that state prison sentence is different.
Absolutely.
You don't have to put consecutive, you don't have to, we're now talking about a county jail sentence under a particular statute. So we're not talking about state prison mandatory minimums. We're talking about a county jail sentence to which that statute applies, and that statute allows for service on weekends. And the statute that says got to serve the 180 before you can be eligible for parole, well, you got to serve the full 180, it doesn't specifically exclude those provisions of that statute which include weekends or nights. Why is that? These are county jail sentences, not state prison. Let's assume we agree that they're different. County jail sentence you can serve specifically by the terms of the statute, nights, weekends, alternative programs. And this statute doesn't exclude that. It includes other things, but it doesn't exclude that. Why is that?
Well, the legislature didn't write the code that way. They didn't go through and specifically say the provisions in 43-2, what apply to what sentence and what don't.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's different when you have a presumption of non-incarceration. That's something that applies across the board. And that's simply saying that there's no presumption of incarceration. The same thing with the term of what a sentence is for
Candidly confuses me, because if you do impose a sentence of with some jail time when there is a presumption of non-incarceration, you've overcome that presumption, correct? Even if it's nights and weekends. The court has decided if it imposes a sentence of 180 days not in this statute, but a normal third degree or fourth degree, the court's decided that the presumption of incarceration is already overcome.
Once it makes the appropriate finding,
right.
Yes.
So then why would the presumption of incarceration work against nights and weekends in that setting? Because it's already been overcome.
Well, because they didn't want the argument that they shouldn't be incarcerated, so they're eliminating that right away. But when they put the language in of 180 days without parole and a fixed minimum term, that's the language the legislature used throughout the code to say that you're not eligible to get out. And when you look at other provisions of the code, individuals with fixed minimum terms are not eligible for ISP. Why is that any different than an intermittent sentence? They're not eligible if they have a mandatory parole term to get out under 32110.
Well, the distinction that I think your adversaries would draw is they're ultimately going to spend 180 days in prison. It's just going to take longer. So all of those legislative objectives then are met. That's their argument.
That's their argument, but it's contrary to the plain language of the statute and the legislative intent. I mean, the legislature has looked at people with two prior drunk driving offenses, with suspended licenses, who continue to drive, to say that we're going to let you serve a sentence on weekends. But for a drunk driving offense, You can't serve it on weekends. So here we are, someone who's been convicted twice of drunk driving, mm-hmm. we're saying, okay, you're worse, but we're still going to let you serve it on weekends, but the drunk driving sentence, we're not going to let you serve it.
Yeah, but you can serve it on outpatient treatment, which...
Not for 90 days, you can't.
I understand, but you got a 180-day sentence, you got to serve the 180 days, but you can serve 90 of it outpatient, presume maybe driving around.
Well, then we'll catch them on this statute, but...
I get that, but I'm saying it doesn't appear that there's any complete consistency to any of these provisions. Arguing there is.
Well, yeah. You're not going to have consistency with the motor vehicle because they don't have parole and eligibility terms. All they
can do...
Well,
this one does.
Title 30, this is a 2C offense. I'm saying motor vehicle.
You're right.
You know,
okay.
They have to put in the language continuous. In the code, when you look at all the crimes where they have parole ineligibility, it's been interpreted to say, you go in, you don't come out till that time is up. And that's why it's been consistently interpreted.
And that's why the language in 41 is different? Is that your position? From Michael's
41?
Law? Section 5-41, 39-541.
Oh, for the
motor vehicle?
That's why,
motor vehicle?
That's
yes,
why
absolutely.
Your view is that it's
because they can't say without parole. They have to say continuous time. But as was pointed out, that the third offender for a DWI, it doesn't say continuous time. They allow 90 days outpatient, but they allow 90 days, you know, you have to serve every one of the 90 days.
But that's under case law, right?
Yes.
And then the case law was the reasoning of that case law was it would make no sense for the legislature to say first or second offenders have to serve this time continuously, but we think third offenders are particularly to be rewarded here, and they can have the intermittent time. And the case law says that doesn't make any sense. Am I right about that?
Yes. And they look at the intent of the statute. When you look at the intent of the statute, it was to incarcerate someone for 180 days. That was
it's a little bit different issue, isn't it, though, really, on that?
Not really, because the statute was passed because people continue to drive on suspended licenses for DWI offenses, and the legislature put it into the criminal code.
They could still do that. Look, this, even 180 days is not a panacea. Person does 180 days, and then the two-year suspension is consecutive. So society, law enforcement, and all of us are hoping and expecting the person isn't going to drive while suspended. It's not like we're incarcerating the person forever, correct?
Well, we're hoping that when you get caught the first time and you get 180 days, you're not going to be driving while suspended again.
We would hope that if they did it consecutively or if they did it intermittently, we would have the same hope, correct?
But again, if
isn't that a little different? When you're in for 180 days, it's very different from when you're serving
yes.
just 2 days a week for the deterrent effect, what you're
yeah.
suggesting.
I mean,
that you don't want to do it again because you want to spend 180 days
exactly.
in the jail.
Well, 180 days, you're going to lose your job, probably.
Not to a
well,
time.
If you get convicted of a DWI and you serve 90 days, you're going to lose your job, too. So I don't see that. The legislature made that call. They've already had someone who's been convicted twice of DWIs, and they continue to drive. The fact that someone can lose their job, yes, that's very unfortunate, but that's on them for driving. And the DWI statute puts you in for 3 months, and you're still going to lose your job there. So I don't think that's a distinction to make, to say, oh, this is too hard, they're going to lose their job. That's something they should have thought about, and that's a legislative call. Also, you have to think about when you're interpreting this language that this is the exact language that is used throughout the code for parole and eligibility terms. So if you start cutting back on that, we're going to have a problem with other offenses that come up with the exact same language that, you know, are not going to be first and second degree, but they're going to be ones that could be third and fourth degree. And certainly when we pointed out about the Graves Act, that when we do the reduction from the 3 years to the 1 year, that's 1 year without parole. As soon as they go this way, they're all going to be coming back and saying, I should be able to serve an intermittent sentence, which would defeat the whole purpose of the Graves Act, and would even reduce the waiver provision even more.
And you're saying that would be true because there's a presumption of non-incarceration in the third and fourth degree, or what is it that distinguishes
well, there are,
first
well,
and second from third
if,
and fourth?
If you look at the fourth degree, if you're pointing a firearm, that's 18 months. That's a presumption, well, normally fourth degree is a presumption of non-incarceration. But here, the presumption of non-incarceration is removed. So the argument would be made that this could apply to everything. I mean, we would argue when there's a presumption of imprisonment that that would take precedence over it. But the language itself should take precedence over this.
Your argument is that your interpretation of this language is keeping it true and consistent with its use throughout Title IIc, and that the interpretation that the Appellate Division is giving is going to open up a whole new set of arguments in many different ways, including Graves Act, NERA, a number of other, and all of the fixed terms in 43C.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, when you look at all the cases that talk about parole and eligibility terms, they're consistent. You go in and you serve every single day, and that's why you don't get any credit for time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all the, you don't get any, you know, any reduction for good time or work credits. None of that applies. It's that you serve every single day, and after that's over, then all the other laws apply.
In addition to your consistency argument, is there also an argument that can be made that this language asking for 180 days to be served without eligibility for parole is more specific than any reference back to the statute that allows for general imposition of an intermittent sentence? So you have a more specific statute overriding reference to a more general provision?
Yes, yes. If this statute did not have the language, if it just said fixed minimum sentence of 180 days and stopped there, we would not have any argument really on the intermittent sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, if the legislature had decided that they wanted to put a term of imprisonment of a certain amount of time, but it wasn't without parole, then other provisions would apply.
Right.
But that's not what they said. They
and you
said
don't have to
parole.
Exclude it to make that happen.
You couldn't. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Couldn't the legislature have simply clarified, had it really intended that the intermittent sentences be out for the statute, just borrow the language from Title 39, say continuous?
Well,
then we wouldn't be here.
If they put continuous in this statute and they didn't have it in any other of the code provisions that said parole and eligibility continuous, then suddenly we would get every other statute, they'd come in and say, well,
not
see,
continuous.
It says continuous
yeah.
here, but it doesn't yeah. say it here, so this must mean that ours are not continuous.
But what we don't know, and this is the limitations of our knowledge at the moment, is with the state prison sentence, the person is remanded into the custody of the Department of Corrections. And that creates, and there are all sorts of other statutes that apply to that. It's one of the reasons why we just we've never heard of intermittent sentences for state prison sentences, correct?
Well, yes. There's a lot of other statutes that would prevent it from happening.
Exactly. That's the reason why we should really, I think, be cutting that off and looking at county jail sentences, because those are the only sentences where intermittent sentences have ever applied. Would you agree?
No.
The only ones they could, because once you're in
right.
Department of Corrections,
exactly.
I mean, if you get a sentence over 1 year, there's no question you're out.
Right.
So we're talking 1 year or less. But again, the argument is you know, one is that you can give an intermittent sentence for certain offenses where there's no mandatory terms, but once you give a sentence of imprisonment, then you're in the custody of whatever facility you're sentenced.
Precisely. So even a flat prison, state prison term, you're not getting intermittent sentences.
No.
Okay.
You know, and even if you get a 364 to county jail, you're not getting an intermittent sentence. You're only getting it if the judge sentenced you to an intermittent sentence of a certain amount.
So when I asked you earlier about what you would say if someone were to take the Appellate Division's decision in this case and try to apply it to a NERA sentence or Graves Act or something else, you have a lot of arguments.
Yes. Oh, yes.
To distinguish that situation from this.
Yes. I think it'd be harder on non-first or second degree offenses if we're getting to third and, well, no third because you'd have to give, well, no, non-first, maybe third and fourth degree offenses, we may have some problems where there may be mandatory sentences. And there are some statutes.
What about 1 year Graves Act possession?
Well, that could be one that would be a problem. That could be one that'd be a problem. I think there's minimum sentences also on other crimes like shoplifting or something else that, you know, is not a lot of time, but it is a minimum period that they have to serve. I haven't gone through the code entirely to see, what other offenses it would be.
Isn't the problem the fact that we'd have to individually hear argument on whether every minimum sentence really was meant by the legislature to be not served intermittently? It's opening up this argument again and again and again because of the absence of language instead of what the legislature has included when it says a minimum term?
Yes, and I think that when we're saying what else should we put in, it seems like if it said continuous, we wouldn't have a problem.
Well, certainly, but if it doesn't, that doesn't mean that...
No, and I don't think the legislature ever thought they had to put continuous in because they've been giving parole and eligibility statutes and sentences since the 80s, and it's never come up that, oh, look, this can be served intermittently. You know, the language without parole is without release.
Anything you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Costello, and I know we have several counsel that are presenting similar issues now. I invite you to incorporate one another's arguments as we go forward.
Good morning. I think we're all talking about the same thing here. We're all talking about statutory interpretation regarding 2C4026. And where we differ, I think we agree that the language could be clearer, otherwise we wouldn't be here. Where we differ is whether language has to be put in to exclude the possibilities under 42.3b7, or whether the language that's in 4026 is sufficient to exclude that possibility. And I think the reason that we're even having this discussion is the tension between the Title 39 and the 2C. We're kind of in uncharted territory here. But we do have to come back to the statutory language and what it says. I don't believe that it's clear or that saying that there is ineligibility for parole for a period of time is the same as saying you can't have an intermittent sentence. We're in an area where there is crossover, where perhaps we haven't been in that area before, which makes it even more important that the legislature be specific in their language and not leave it open or leave doors open for us to have these arguments. If the legislature had desired to keep the drivers who are suspended off the streets longer than the 180 days, whether they be continuous or intermittent, perhaps they could have added an additional suspension. Clearly, we've already addressed that the suspension will continue after whatever period of incarceration. So keeping the drivers off the road, even though that's presented as one of the main reasons for enacting this legislation, it's not really being effective in the way that it's been presented. So it can't really be a primary reason for enacting the legislation. What the legislation has done is it's created a criminal designation for behavior that was not previously criminal. And additional jail time, whether it be intermittent or straight. And this paradigm is clearly not applicable to the first and second degree crimes, as I believe the Attorney General conceded. So I think we need to focus on the exact language of the statute that we're trying to understand. We need to look at where that language has been used in the past and how it's been used. And I think that if we do that, that we will find that the appellate division decision was correct. I have nothing further.
Can you respond to the arguments that your colleagues have made that look at the code as entirety and see the effect of the appellate division ruling on other sections, other third and fourth degree offenses?
I went through last night and tried to make a list of all the third and fourth degree offenses, and I got to the third page and I stopped because I just ran out of time. But as a whole, they are, of course, lesser offenses, nonviolent offenses, white crime, white-collar crime, things like that. So I don't particularly see a problem in applying the 2C43-2B7 options to those offenses. It's not precluded. If the legislature wanted to preclude it with respect to certain charges, they certainly could do so.
So your answer is, don't worry, it'll apply across the board.
I believe so, because as the Attorney General conceded, it really isn't going to be an issue with first and second degree crimes. There may be a few issues, as I think Justice Patterson pointed out, with the one-year Graves Act or certain third or fourth degree offenses where there may be some gray area, but it's not going to open up a title gate and create a flooding of the courts,
I
think is the argument.
Yeah, if I may, you're saying the Attorney General says it's not applying to first and second degree, but I would respectfully suggest that if there's an opening through which first and second degree defendants have an opportunity to walk, they will walk. So what is, apart from what the position's taken by other counsel, what is the statutory distinction between first and second degree and what you are now saying is third and fourth and this, right? You're grouping
right.
this in with third and fourth, that makes intermittent sentences unavailable to first and second degree offenders. Is there anywhere we can look at to see that distinction? And if not, don't we have a problem?
I think you need to look to the individual statutes that are being violated.
So the individual statute, let's just, you know, you're, I'm sure, very familiar with the homicide offenses. What prevents, if you are right, what prevents a judge from saying, Mr. or Ms. Defendant, you've just been found guilty of first-degree murder, but we're going to let you do nights and weekends for the next 150 years, and everybody will like having you around during the week?
Common sense?
Respectfully, common sense is a wonderful thing, and it's used all the time by our judges. But I think what you're saying is there is no statutory distinction. That if you win on this, with the language that you are saying allows for intermittent sentences, could apply to homicide.
In a statutory construction framework, yes, it could.
Okay.
Unless there is a statute. A specific statute that overrides it.
And we're seeing the language that you say overrides it only in motor vehicle offenses. Continuous, right?
No, I'm sure there's other language that could preclude it, such as, I don't know.
Are you in, it sounds to me, and maybe you can correct me,
okay,
that you're out of your depth in understanding the statutory construct for state prison. When a person is remanded to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections, because there are all sorts of laws that apply to that restrict the power of Superior Court judges. Like a Superior Court judge cannot tell the Commissioner in what particular prison someone is to serve.
Right. Yes. On both questions.
And I just don't think we know right now whether or not, based upon those statutory constructs, that this intermittent sentence could apply to any state prison sentence, which was something that Ms. Henderson was apparently willing to concede.
Yes, and for that reason, I said my response was you need to look at each individual statute and see what other requirements go with that.
But if that's true, then the murderer and the person who's convicted of aggravated sexual assault or whatever is just as eligible under your position as your client is for intermittent sentences.
I don't know that.
You don't know it. Okay.
I don't know that.
But you did say you think third and fourth degree no problem.
Well, that's because that's what the Attorney General said.
Well, I don't think the Attorney General was saying no problem. I think the Attorney General was saying that if your position wins, it opens up a door that shouldn't be opened. I think that's what the Attorney General was actually arguing.
Collectively opening that door. The legislature opened that door. Our job is to figure out what they
AG said the legislature didn't open that door. They said parole ineligibility means you serve that entire period of time before you get released, you have any kind of intermittent sentence, anything, you must. That's how the legislature defined it, whether it's a first, second, third, or fourth degree offense. If you get a period of parole ineligibility, that's what you serve. You're not eligible for these other programs. And that's throughout 2C. That's what their argument is. They're not saying the legislature specifically chose not to do what you're asking them to do. That's what their argument is. When they wanted it, when it's motor vehicle, that's different. That's not 2C. That's what they're saying. So refute that.
Well...
I think that's what they're saying.
Okay, their position is because it says not eligible for parole, that means that you can't have interim sentencing. They're saying that they're equivalent because you are not allowed to physically step out of the building.
That's what their argument is, that that's the terminology used for all 2C offenses, up and down, first degree to fourth degree.
I don't know that. I'm not equipped to address that question. I'm sorry.
Let me ask you something. You mentioned just at the outset of your argument that the legislature could add an additional period of suspension in order to keep people off the road, right? That was
yes.
Your argument. But we're dealing here with people who don't seem to be all that focused on when the legislature tells them to stay off the road when they're suspended, because they've already been convicted of, right, two or potentially more driving while suspended offenses. So why would an additional, the legislature could put 50 year suspension, and respectfully, isn't there a question whether that would deter this particular group of defendants?
Certainly, there's a question as to what, if anything, will defer these particular defendants.
Well, the argument
whether it be straight time, whether it be intermittent time, whether it be additional suspensions, it's all conjecture.
Well,
we know
straight time deters them for the period of straight time.
And so does intermittent sentencing for the period of time that they're in jail.
Only for the weekends.
But it's a lot of weekends.
Okay. All right.
Got it.
Anything you'd like to add?
No, thank you.
Mr. Otto.
Good morning. My comments will be quite brief in terms of the opening remarks. And I would ask, and I don't know if it's appropriate, whether I can yield time to the public defender who will be arguing next.
Go ahead and present. We'll be generous with the public defender.
Okay, thank you. And I won't restate what's already been said. The legislature certainly could have, and in fact in this case probably should have, crafted a statute that was clear if the state's position is to be supported. They did not. What they said was very clear, that there is no preclusion for the sentencing that was provided by Judge Shuck, and that in the very well-reasoned opinion by the appellate division was approved. One thing I noticed in listening to the justices today, at least some, is that it appears, and in consideration of the state's arguments, it appears that this really is applicable to a county jail situation, and I would so submit. And that is the context in which I think that the review should be taken. And in that regard, it would appear that the statutory construction analysis, which has been very well set out by the appellate division, and the rule of lenity should cut in the defendant's favor in this case.
How do we limit it? Let's say we conclude that the state's right, that throughout 2C, ineligible for parole means must be served consecutively. You can't get out on any program at all until you serve that mandatory minimum. How do we, if we conclude that's correct, that that's the statutory scheme and that's the way the statute needs to be interpreted here under 2C, there's an exception for county jail time. How do we carve out that exception and be consistent with the legislative structure scheme? How do we do that?
I don't think it's an either or. I think that it can be done in terms of the applicability to when the legislature says 180 days, that just about by definition indicates a county jail sentence. So I think my humble view is that the analysis would stop there.
Do you see the issue that's been raised about the potential, the way that other statutes with much more serious crimes and much more serious offenses could be looped into this? If you're, and I understand you're here arguing for a client who is would serve any amount in county jail, but do you see that the appellate division's ruling potentially could extend to much more serious offenses based on the argument that's being made as to the meaning of the statute?
As has been previously stated, there are a number of, if I may answer it this way, it may be a little oblique, but I'm going to give it a try. If you go back to the difference between the DWI, municipal court charge, and the criminal charge, it was indicated that the municipal court charge was wholly different than this. And in that regard, the legislature has spoken with regard to, I probably can't cogently respond to you.
Why don't we leave that for the public defender?
Yeah,
and if give I her may. A chance to take us.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Otto.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Friedman. And I don't want to crimp your presentation, but you do understand the concern about the impact of the appellate division decision on other sentences under 2C, and I hope you'll address that.
I understand,
that.
Your Honor.
Okay.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. I think Justice Patterson really hit the nail right on the head with your first question to the AG when Your Honor asked if the AG's argument as to parole was really the same as release. And I don't want to mince Your Honor's words, so instead I would like to just begin by starting with the beginning of the first paragraph of the AG's brief. And in the first paragraph of the AG's brief, counsel quotes 2C4026's shall not be eligible for parole language, and then goes on to state, quote, the language of the statute could not be clearer. If convicted, a person must spend 180 days in custody before release. But all the state really did here was substitute the word parole for the word release. And it's as if the state didn't think that anyone would notice. And really, I think that that's what this case boils down to. It's the state's argument that being ineligible for parole is the exact same thing as being ineligible for a term of non-continuous incarceration under 2C43-2B7, which allows for release and reentry. And despite the state's argument, intermittent sentences under 2C43-2B7 does not violate 2C40-26's mandatory parole disqualifier because, unlike parole and other jail alternatives, intermittent sentences do not reduce or otherwise eliminate the real time a defendant must serve behind bars.
So let's say a first degree offender is given a term of 20 years.
Yes.
Subject to NERA.
Yes.
Is that defendant eligible for intermittent sentences?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I would like to state at the outset that is not, as Your Honor is well aware, that's not directly before the court.
Understood.
Right now.
But you do see that anything that we say about that language here could potentially be. So my question is,
yes.
Someday,
yes.
A year from now,
right.
you're here representing, not as amicus, but representing right. Do you make that argument? Do you have an argument?
I don't think that it would apply to NERA at all for a number of reasons. As a number of the justices have already indicated, I don't think that intermittent sentences could possibly apply to state prison sentences.
In the statute, because I understand there's common sense has been cited by your colleagues,
mm-hmm.
that judges are not going to do something that's going to endanger the public. I understand
right.
all that. But where in the code mm-hmm. can we find the language that distinguishes a NERA sentence from this for this purpose?
Under 2C43-2B7, in Cannell, note 3, it says that intermittent sentences should only be applied to relatively short sentences. And so here we have a relatively short sentence.
And what's the support for that statement?
I'm sorry, what's that?
What's the support for that statement?
It's note 3.
No, but what's the support for Mr. Cannell's statement?
I believe it's State v. Silva.
How does that support it?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, to tell you the honest truth. In addition, there is an abundance of case law that does stand for the proposition that the code should not be construed to result in absurdity. And I think we can all agree in this courtroom that it would be absurd to have mirror sentences that would be intermittent. So if it were only weekends,
if it's not prohibited by the code, how would it be an abuse of discretion for our review for a trial court to allow an intermittent sentence when it's not prohibited? How could we say that was an abuse of discretion and
right,
overturn that?
Exactly, Your Honor. I'm not sure that it would exactly be an abuse of discretion, but in a case like that, we can imagine, let's say it were a 50-year NERA sentence, we can imagine an example where if it were only weekends, the actual sentence could extend beyond the defendant's life expectancy. And so in that type of example, it would result in absurdity.
Well, what about 20 years?
How about grades at? Yeah. How about a year?
Yeah.
Right. And so I think it might have to be a case-by-case example, but I think it's also important to take a step back.
We don't want to do that.
Right. I think it's also important, though, to take a step back and remember that we're here because the state appealed, because the state is arguing that this is an illegal sentence. And if it's not an illegal sentence, then the state doesn't have standing to be before Your Honors. So I think that's also important.
No, the state is arguing that it's an illegal sentence, and they have a statutory interpretation that would preclude this sentence.
Right.
I think there's no question why we're
right.
Here. Okay. But they're making an argument that what is implicit in the statute, in the code, applies here as well because the language is similar, and that continuous language that appears in Title 39 is there for a reason in Title 39 because the other aspects of the code are not there.
Right. And so all I meant to say that with all due respect is that we certainly maintain that this is not illegal. Whether that would be illegal, I think, is a question for another day, and I would be happy to brief that for Your Honors. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think it would certainly be impractical, and I think that it certainly would step on the toes of the DOC. I think that a judge, there would certainly, I think that it would probably be an abuse of discretion. I'm not sure that it would be illegal.
What about other third and fourth degree offenses?
I think that so long as it's under 365 days and it's in a county jail, I can't imagine why it would be illegal, Your Honor.
So you agree with your colleague that the argument being made here would apply to third and fourth degree?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because there are many third and fourth degree offenders who were sentenced to county jail for short periods of time.
Yes, Your Honor. And in response to the prosecutor and the AG, I'm actually very surprised, respectfully, that they've never seen intermittent sentences because I only became a member of the bar in 2012, and I've seen it before. I don't know if it's just because they're not appealed, because defendants don't appeal intermittent sentences because they're happy with them, but I saw them when I was a law clerk in the law division.
In what kind of offense?
I don't really remember, but I know that they have been imposed, probably in county jail settings.
For a flat term. A person could be sentenced for shoplifting or theft, given a 90-day sentence, and clearly this statute, the flat term, would permit intermittent sentencing. I don't even know that the state is arguing otherwise. I don't think they are.
Right. I mean, I don't want to speak on behalf of the state. Yes, Your Honor.
Because if it doesn't apply to those offenses, then it won't apply to anything.
Right. And the legislature surely enacted 2C43 2B7 for a reason. It's never been repealed. And in fact, 2C43 2B7 has been in existence since 1979, and one of our canons of statutory interpretation, if your honors don't mind me going on, unless your honors have any more questions about that. One of our canons of statutory interpretation is that the legislature is presumed to be aware of statutes when it enacts new statutes. And so the legislature is presumed to have been aware of 2C432B7 when it enacted 2C4026. And the legislature knows how to prohibit intermittent sentences, and it has done so in other statutes throughout both the code and other statutes in New Jersey. And so despite the state's assertion that it needed to say continuous days, that's not true. And I have brought three examples to your honor's attention today. So 2C462A2, which is defaulting on financial obligations, 2A4A43C1, which is incarcerating juveniles in
would you give us that one more time?
I will, Your Honors. Your Honor, and I'll submit a letter if Your Honors would like as well. The first is 2C462A2, that's right. Defaulting on financial obligations.
But that provision is using the word consecutive.
Yes.
To say that the period shall not exceed 90 consecutive days.
Yes.
It's a different use of the term by the legislature than that for which you are arguing today.
What I am saying, my position is that when the legislature wants to prohibit
they didn't want somebody to spend more time than they were setting in jail.
Yes. What I am trying to assert, and maybe inarticulately, and if Your Honor disagrees, then reasonable minds may differ. When the legislature intends to prohibit intermittent sentences, first of all, the legislature is aware of 2C43-2B7, and when the legislature intends to prohibit intermittent sentences, it knows how to do that by saying consecutive days. It can do so. The defendant has to serve these days consecutively.
And there are dozens and dozens of criminal statutes that don't have that term consecutive
That's
in them.
That's correct.
And yet you're saying that we kind of know that the legislature wouldn't want those offenses to be punishable by intermittent sentences.
Well, because 2C43-2B7 coexists with those other statutes. And so the legislature knows that 2C43-2B7.
Right. But the logic of your argument is that without the term consecutive, that anything that intermittent is available.
Yes.
And that would apply to serious offenses as well.
Yes, Your Honor. Just like the legislature just like there's statutes that say, a term of imprisonment applies because there's other statutes that say, there's a presumption of incarceration unless, everything coexists together. Everything in the code needs to be read in conjunction with each other.
Why don't you give us your other two examples?
Okay. The other two are not in the code. So if your honors are not convinced by that. 2A4A43C1, that's incarcerating juveniles in detention centers. So that's prior to the code. And then 39536, defaulting on payments, and that's in the context of Title 39.
Both the juveniles, obviously, range of considerations apply to juveniles.
Yes.
And that's
also
a maximum sentence. It's setting a maximum sentence in that provision that you're citing to us.
Yes, yes. Okay. Your Honor, do your homework. It's just anecdotal evidence that the legislature knows how to use its language, that the state's argument is that the words shall not be eligible for parole somehow should be construed to mean, well, parole is, a proxy for continuous days of incarceration, and my argument simply is it's not a proxy.
You can't, are you arguing that unless the word continuous is there, and for your one example that's out of the code, unless your argument is that the word continuous is there, the legislature didn't intend to make it continuous?
Yes, because it
that's
needs
a
to
lot
be read
of
in conjunction with 2C43-2B7.
Right. So you're saying that Section 27 reigns supreme unless we see the word continuous, then we're looping in first, second, third, third and fourth degree offenses that don't have that word in there?
Yes, Your Honor. I simply mean to say that the legislature knows what it's doing and it uses its language.
So the magic language we should be looking for, I think you're telling us, is continuous.
Yes.
And absent continuous, even if it's a first degree murder, that means it's open for intermittent sentences. And I know you're saying the DOC is different, but the DOC doesn't override the legislature.
Correct.
You know, maybe the DOC doesn't like letting people out during the week, but if the legislature, if your argument is right, and the legislature has to say the word continuous unless otherwise intermittent sentences are legal, then a judge can say intermittent sentence.
Yes.
And that's not an illegal sentence.
Yes, Your Honor.
Pretty big argument.
Yes, Your Honor. And although, I would just like to add,
we just don't have before us, and you don't have it at your fingertips, and none of us have it at our fingertips right now, all of the statutes dealing with the powers of the Commissioner of the Department of Corrections. That's like blowing over that, correct? Are you familiar with all those statutes?
No, Your Honor, and okay. I tried.
I think that an abundance of modesty about what we don't know, we ought
yes,
to,
Your Honor,
we ought
and
to concede
I,
that.
And, and in all fairness, I tried to get my hands on some of those, and it's pretty hard.
For the record, there's nothing I don't know. Okay?
Don't agree to that.
But by way of analogy, and I know that work release is different, but it's comparable. By way of analogy, even defendants who are sentenced to NERA for murder and rape, those defendants during their last 2 years of their NERA sentences, they're allowed to be released.
But not by Superior Court judges.
Not
that's
by
all
Superior Court judges.
It's all governed by statutes that deal with. So
exactly.
So
exactly.
What
even though, I'm sorry.
The only other thing I wanted to add, we keep on talking about the term continuous.
Mm-hmm.
The legislature could have added to 40-26C, notwithstanding the term of imprisonment, 2C43-6, 2C44-1, they could have put 2C43-2B7, too, notwithstanding that. That's not a difficult fix.
That's true. That's very true. That's very true.
I thought I'd hand you that.
Thank you.
That's a softball.
I appreciate that. I think when push comes to shove, we can't ascribe intent into the language of a statute that simply isn't there. And with respect to the state's argument as to protecting the community, I think it's important to take a step back and realize that, yes, we don't disagree. The legislature surely intended to protect the community when enhancing this 39340 offense to an indictable offense, when mandating this STIP. But I think it's important to note that the legislature intends to protect the community when it enacts any criminal statute. That's true for theft. That's true for murder. That's true for rape. Every criminal statute, every statute in the code, the legislature intends to protect the community.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
The period of license suspension is consecutive to the period of imprisonment? Am I correct about that?
Well, the period of license suspension under 39340 can merge into 2C4026, and the only thing that survives is the fines and penalties. So it's actually a lesser included. 39340 is a municipal offense. 2C4026 is an indictable offense, and they're lesser included. I don't have the case law offhand.
Can the period of license suspension run while the person is in jail?
It can, but it doesn't always. And depending upon when it's prosecuted, it doesn't always. And so especially because A and B are different statutes. And so I believe, and I always get it confused in my head, but I think A is one predicate DWI and you have two license suspension. No, I think
it's... Let me tell you the reason why I'm asking this question. Because clearly under your intermittent sentencing scheme, You're not suggesting on the days that the person is not incarcerated in the county jail, that the person's license suspension isn't in effect, right?
So some of my clients, by the time they're prosecuted, they have not, their licenses are no longer suspended. It's rare, but they're not always suspended anymore. I've had a myriad of these cases, and
because by the time these cases are tried, they've actually served their period of license suspension.
Yeah, it's rare, but it's not always the case. And
you're saying merger could apply too, right?
Yes, that's your argument. Exactly,
yeah.
Your Honor.
So it may not be that they had the license suspension may disappear.
Yes, Your Honor.
So technically, somebody could be leaving prison on Sunday night and driving to work Monday morning.
And it appears that the legislature was more concerned with the mandatory STIP than it was with imposing a license suspension when enacting 2C.
Is that possibly because licenses with this particular narrow group of defendants, license suspensions don't seem to mean a whole lot?
Probably, Your Honor.
Makes sense.
Ms. Breedman, I think we have your position. Is there anything else you wanted to?
Yes, Your Honor, just one more thing. With respect to the credits issue, I would just like to clarify my office's position for the record, because it seems to have been misunderstood or confused. In the appellate division, my office's position is as follows. Anytime a defendant serves a partial day in county jail on an indictable offense, my office's position is that he or she should receive a full day of credit.
Now, the appellate division said blocks of 24 hours are required. Are you challenging that?
My position is that the appellate division rewrote 2C 43-2B7 in that regard, and that appears to be a separation.
But did you file a cross? Is that even before us?
You're amicus, right?
Yes, I'm amicus.
Have the parties raised the issue? Have the parties challenged the 24-hour block period in the appellate division decision?
No, Your Honor. I just wanted to clarify my office's position for the record as to the credits. We are satisfied with the majority of the appellate division's issue. The appellate division's decision. I just wanted to clarify my office's position because it could have further ramifications as to credits.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You may.
First and foremost, with all due respect to my adversary, the license suspension does not merge. Unfortunately, off the top of my head, I cannot recall the case name, but merger only applies to, for a violation of the underlying offense here is 39:3-40F2, and that deals with, again, driving while suspended tied to a DWI. And under that statute, there's a mandatory 10 to 90 days of in-county jail term of imprisonment that is mandated. That would merge with the 4026 180 days. However, the fines and penalties inclusive of the license suspension, that does not merge. Another issue that ties into the intermittent sentence and causes a problem is license suspensions do not begin until the completion of the term of imprisonment, because you don't want someone to be serving a term of imprisonment while contemporaneously serving a term of license suspension, because that would make the license suspension entirely moot. Now, if you have someone that's under 180 days, mandatory, full 180, how do we now then comprehend the service of their license suspension if they're serving it intermittently? Because technically speaking, they're still incarcerated. So are they serving their license suspension intermittently now, Monday through Thursday, Monday through Friday, not on Saturday and Sunday when they're in jail? Again, it leads to an absurd result. And tying to that absurd result, with all due respect to Mr. Connell, what State versus Silva stood for was that dealt with the possession with intent to distribute case. And there's a mandatory, statutorily mandated period of parole disqualification. And in Silva, the court specifically found that they were capable of giving a weekend service for 180 because the state and the defendant had entered into a plea agreement. And when a plea agreement is entered into by the state, that now waives the mandatory period of parole disqualification. That was the only way in Silva the court was able to give that weekend sentence. The court said, but for the contract plea, but for the plea, we would not be able to give a weekend sentence in this instance.
You're not arguing that intermittent sentences are not available for third and fourth degree crimes that are served in the county jail where there isn't a mandatory minimum?
So long as there is not a statutorily mandated period of parole ineligibility, yes. But when there is a statutorily mandated period of parole ineligibility, the trial court is divested of its discretion. And where does the discretion exist? It exists in 2C:43-2, which gives a myriad of sentencing alternatives. But when the discretion is divested, you cannot then give a multitude of sentencing alternatives. And going to deterrence, very quickly, Your Honors, unless my math is incorrect, and I am a lawyer, so my math may not be exactly perfect, but if a defendant is serving his sentence one day a week, Saturday to Sunday, because under the Appellate Division's determination, they had to redefine what was day-to-day credits to fit their interpretation of 2C:40-26. Across our criminal jurisprudence, jail credits are based on day-to-day. We do not engage in a minute-by-minute, second-by-second analysis to determine jail credits. But in this instance, and this instance only, the Appellate Division engaged in that interpretation. So if a defendant were to go in on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. and leave on Sunday morning at 9 a.m., a 24-hour block, one day, it would take a defendant about 3.5 years to serve his 180-day sentence. If he got 2 days credit, it would take him about 1 year and 9 months. If he got 3 days credit, it would take him 1 year and 2 months to serve that sentence. That is absurd. It is absurd that it would take a defendant that long to serve 188 days. And again, that would take the teeth out of the deterrent nature of this statute. It would be an inconvenience to the defendant, not a deterrence. This statute exists. It's clear in the legislative history that this was to combat the reports of fatal and serious accidents caused by individuals who are operating their vehicle during a period of license suspension tied to a DWI. Permitting them to be free during the week to operate their vehicle completely unhinges that entire purpose, the entire intent behind this statute. It cannot be said that a defendant should be given the opportunity of 3.5 years to serve a 180-day sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take